Welcome to this podcast series on the life of Lucius Annaeus Seneca. Part 1, Seneca's Early Life. I guess the first thing in any podcast series is knowing exactly where to start. I'm going to begin with some name calling. Teacher, writer, dramatist, philosopher, statesman, counselor to an emperor. These are some of the words used to describe Lucius Annaeus Seneca, who's also known to history as Seneca the Younger, Seneca the Philosopher, or just plain Seneca. Now let's try some other words. Sycophant, hypocrite, liar, adulterer, accomplice to murder. All of these labels were applied to Seneca at some stage or other during his life. So what was he? One of them? Some of them? Was he actually all of them? In his heyday, which was the 40s to the mid 60s AD, Seneca was a big cheese, quite as renowned in Rome and throughout the Roman world as Cicero had been the century before. Seneca was a prolific author. He produced plays, he wrote consolations, prepared philosophical treatises, he wrote political satires, wrote encyclopedic works on natural science, screeds of moral letters, and much else besides that hasn't survived, including a biography of his father and his ghost speeches for the Emperor Nero. He was a member of the senatorial class, ultimately rising to suffect consul in AD 55 or 56 after passing through the offices of quaestor and praetor. His patroness was Agrippina, famous and powerful, daughter of the revered and beloved Germanicus and wife of the Emperor Claudius. She was also mother to the Emperor Nero. Seneca was the tutor to Nero and later, for a time, before it all went horribly wrong, that emperor's closest advisor. Many times in his political career, Seneca fell afoul of the Julio-Claudian incumbents on the throne. Caligula, either through jealousy or genuine scorn of Seneca's literary prowess, wanted him killed. Seneca managed to avoid that one, but only just. Claudius, next on the throne, exiled Seneca to Corsica for between 8 and 9 years, ostensibly on the grounds of adultery with Julia Livilla, who was Agrippina's sister and Claudius's niece. The true reason was probably far more complicated than that. When Agrippina married Claudius, she managed to secure Seneca's recall to Rome to tutor her son, the future Emperor Nero. There then followed the murder of Britannicus, Claudius's son, by his former wife, the notorious Jezebel Messalina, thereby clearing Nero's path to the throne. And then there was the murder of Agrippina herself. Was Seneca implicit and or complicit in these carry-ons? That is something I will discuss in later podcasts. Seneca finally realized what an uncontrollable monster Nero had become, but by then it was far, far too late. Kept near to his erstwhile pupil, in just the way a cat will not let a wounded and condemned mouse from its sight, Seneca was forced to remain near to his prince until he was ultimately forced to commit suicide on the grounds of an alleged conspiracy against the emperor's life. During all of this, Seneca was writing non-stop. One of the biggest problems for people who want to understand Seneca is the gaping discrepancy between the high idealism of what he wrote and advocated in his writings and what he actually did in practice. He was called an adulterer, a murderer, a political chameleon, up to his very neck in the licentious and nefarious shenanigans of Nero's court. Even during his own lifetime, Seneca was called out as a raging hypocrite. Somebody wrote one thing, but in practice did something completely different. But he wrote about moderation, the need to live according to nature, high philosophical morality. How dare he do this, some asked, when he was one of the richest men in the empire? Others even accused him of indirectly sparking Boudicca's rebellion In Britain, by recalling massive personal loans that he'd made to various British chieftains at very short notice. To many, what Seneca wrote and what was written about him are two very different accounts of the same man. The aim of this podcast series is to take a journey through the man's life in an attempt to reconcile this glaring discrepancy. And so I'm going to start at the very beginning. This first podcast will take us from Seneca's birth near to, or in what is the modern city of Cordoba, Andalusia in southern Spain, through to his journey as a child to the centre of the Roman world, to Rome itself. Today, the Guadalquivir River flows serenely and actually quite shallowly through the arches of the Roman bridge at Cordoba. The river's modern name is derived from an Arabic phrase equivalent to Great Valley, but at the time Seneca was born, it was called the Baetis and gave its name to the Roman province of Hispania Baetica through which it flowed. Nowadays, the river is navigable only as far as modern Seville, but in Roman times, sizable ships could get as far upstream as Cordoba, thus making it an extremely strategic settlement. The Romans, acknowledging the important site of the town, had taken it forcibly from the Carthaginians as far back as 206 BC, so by Seneca's time it had been in Roman hands for a couple of centuries. It had acquired the status of colonia with the title Patricia between 46 and 45 BC. It had been squabbled over between Caesar and the Pompeians during the civil wars, and was eventually settled with veterans by Augustus. It became the capital of Baetica and was a centre of Roman intellectual life in the wider province of Hispania Ulterior, or further Spain. Since then, Cordoba has been ruled by the Byzantines, the Visigoths, the Umayyad Muslims, and then it eventually passed back into Spanish hands in AD 1236. But at the time of Seneca's birth, we have to picture it as a thriving river port city, with both a colonial and provincial forum, as well as many temples. Cordoba today is a city steeped in architectural history, and the layers lie heavy on this beautiful Andalusian city. The passing ages and different rulers have fused much of what remains. The wonderful Mezquita, for example, started life as a Christian church, but was then enlarged into a stunning Moorish mosque, only to be converted back again into a Christian cathedral. But much has also been lost down the ages. There are some Roman remains, but they are scattered like marbles across the city, and even the museum's Roman section comes across as rather disjointed, although this may be hardly surprising in a city that wears its history like a heavy multi-layered cloak. Cordoba's most famous sons, or most famous Roman sons, are Seneca, Seneca's father, and Seneca's nephew, the celebrated Roman poet Lucan, although you'd hardly know that nowadays. I tramped around Cordoba in 40 degree heat for several days, trying to identify where the Roman city poked up, breaking the surface of today's city like rotten teeth protruding through the gums of history. There are some walls, the lovely old Roman bridge across the Guadalquivir River, although Seneca would likely not recognise it today as it's been reconstructed so often. There are some Roman mosaics and pavements beneath a few central city hotels, and some quite striking temple remains. There are various statues, mosaics, building remains, tombstones and trinkets in the museum, a few Roman pillars scattered about, and that's really about it. I'd expected there to be at least a nod to Seneca, or even his nephew Lucan, at the museum, but the desk clerk who let me into the museum for free didn't actually know who either of them were. Somebody does care about the Roman past though. Quite by accident, meandering along small dark alleyways between Roman sites on the city map, I came across a lovely little open square in which some person or persons had constructed a beautiful tinkling fountain laid out like a Roman bathhouse. On its far wall was engraved in Latin, "Celebrated Cordoba, the font of wisdom, to Seneca and Lucan, 65 to 1965. This beautiful city had commemorated the 1900th anniversary of the enforced deaths of its two most famous Roman sons. It was a very sweet notion. Nobody knows exactly when Seneca was born. Estimates range from 8 BC to 1 BC, but in the grand scheme of things, his actual birth year is not terrifically important. His father was a member of the Roman equestrian or knightly class and held land in Baetica. The area around Cordoba was known for its wheat and olive production, so perhaps it was these that were floated down the Baetis River to its mouth on the modern-day Gulf of Cadiz on the Atlantic, and thence southeast through the Straits of Gibraltar and across the Mediterranean to the great city of Rome itself. Seneca was born to Annaeus Seneca, called Seneca the Elder to distinguish him from his more famous son. The father was an author of books designed to hone the skills required for rhetoric, an art form highly prized in the classical world and an entrenched part of an upper-class Roman boy's education. Seneca's mother, Helvia, was a formidable woman from an eminent family in the province of Hispania Baetica. The terms for relationships in Latin can be quite misleading, with some seemingly used interchangeably, although this could of course be the fault of later copyists, but it would appear that either Helvia's own sister, or perhaps stepsister, married a future prefect of Egypt, which was one of the top overseas appointments for a Roman official. At any rate, the family was well connected in the higher echelons of Roman society, both in Spain and in Rome itself. The younger Seneca had two brothers. The elder was called Novatus, and he seems to have been the politically ambitious son. Seneca's younger brother was called Mela, by all accounts a more sensitive and creative soul, and he was destined to father the poet Lucan, whose fate was to become inextricably intertwined with that of Seneca himself, with both uncle and nephew eventually falling victim to Nero's growing paranoia in AD 65. The history books are silent about Seneca's early life in Baetica. None of the later commentators became interested in him until his run-in with the probably by then quite insane Emperor Caligula, who had decided to target Seneca's writing style. But by that stage, Seneca was probably well into his 30s. So what was going on in the life of this man between the last years of the 1st century BC and the AD 30s? This man whose fate it would be to roller coaster his way through the reigns of some of Roman history's more notorious nutter emperors. There's some mystery here and no little controversy. If Seneca's De Vita Patris, or My Father's Life, had survived, we might know more for certain. But there is enough, both in Seneca's own writings and the works of the ancient commentators, to fill in at least some of the gaps. In one surviving work, probably written when he was in his 40s, Seneca tells how he was carried in his mother's sister's arms to Rome. This statement in itself reveals much. The aunt Seneca mentions, he does not actually name, but she's likely to have been some kind of in-law rather than a blood relative. There is also no mention of how Seneca was taken to Rome, although a sea journey is likely to have been considered the safer of the two options, especially with a young child in tow. There is also no mention of Seneca's own parents being participants in this journey, although this would not be altogether surprising. The implication is that Seneca's father was already in Rome, as he was a well-known frequenter of the rhetor's halls, and he would have wanted to keep his and his family's political stock high, while Seneca's mother stayed behind and maybe supervised the Baetican estates. Perhaps the aunt was on her way to Rome to join her own husband, who was even then rising up the political ranks, and it may have seemed an opportune time for the younger Seneca to join his father in that city and come under his direct tutelage and guidance. Whenever it was, Seneca was still very young. The journey to Rome must have taken place before AD 5, as Seneca, in another surviving work, records being a witness to the daily routine of the great Asinius Pollio. Pollio had, under the patronage of the Emperor Augustus, been responsible for the inauguration of Rome's first truly public library, and he was also probably a crony of Seneca's father. Asinius Pollio died in AD 5, so the incident Seneca describes must have happened in or before that year. What little evidence there is then points to Seneca arriving in Rome as a young child, probably little more than an infant. Augustus was still firmly in control of the Principate, and Rome was in its full glory.